my eyes were open to all these people who were buying 100 unit complexes and only been in the business a couple of years. That seemed so far out of reach for me up until that point. And then right at this point is when we said, you know what? Hey, if this many people can do it, I can do this too. We're going to commit to this. And we did. We sold the farm, sold everything related to the horse training business, because I knew that would always be a draw for me. Like, people would still be calling, hey, can you work with this horse? Can you do this? And I would want to do it.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Whitney Sewell is a seasoned real estate investor, podcast host, and philanthropist. He is a CEO and founder of LifeBridge Capital, a multifamily syndication investment firm with over 1,000 doors and $300 million in assets under management. He is also the host of the daily podcast, The Real Estate Syndication Show, and founder of the LifeBridge Foundation. Whitney, welcome to the show.
My pleasure. Honored to be here, Sam, on your show.
Hey, man, the pleasure, again, is all mine. I got three questions. I ask the same three questions to every guest who comes on the show. Quickly, can you tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Where did I start? I started, I would say, military and law enforcement with small multifamily. Realized there was a lot more to it than that, or I could do a lot more. And let's see, where did I start? What was the next one?
Where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah, many things helped me to get where I'm at. And I'm sure we'll talk about them. But law enforcement, military, federal agent, all those things helped me to get where I am at today. And actually taking strides, being uncomfortable, it helped me to get where I'm at today. And then, you mentioned that $300 million in assets under management, and that's happened very fast. The Lord has been very kind to us and our business, our investors, and our investors have obviously been a big part of that as well.
That's really interesting. Let's dig in, because I think the interesting parts of these stories is for a lot of people is the beginning phases, right? I mean, because there's so many people that go, oh my gosh, 300 million assets under management. Like, is that a mind? Let's start here. Is that a mind boggling number to you?
To me, it is. I mean, you and I were talking about it a little bit before we started recording. I mean, we were talking about what, 150 versus 300. And it's like, I can't even believe that number almost, you know, when I hear it now, but it is just evidence of what the Lord's done and sustaining us and, man, growing our business. I can't believe it.
Wow. That's awesome. So law enforcement, federal agent, military, I mean, those are not typically career tracks, especially, you know, most of those have a very linear, hey, stay in this for the duration, right? At what point in time did you say, wait, there's more than the track I'm on. How do I get off or out of this?
Yeah. You know, military taught me a lot. And one thing, you know, being in Iraq for a year, coming home, you know, one thing is you have to have a never give up mentality. I mean, it's not an option, right? To give up when you're in combat, other people's lives are depending on you. I mean, to perform, you know, my son had to go out and get the horse up last night, and it was raining a little bit and he had a cut on his hand. He's six. So he came in and he said, that was hard. And it's, you know, we were talking about just perspective, right? Your perspective. And for him, well, that was stretching him a little bit, right? Having to go out in the rain. He's got some pretty good cuts on his hands where he's been out messing around and they were hurting a little bit. And we were talking about that perspective, and the military gave me, you know, a different perspective, right, on life. And ultimately, what's difficult, right? What helps me to think about now as an entrepreneur, what's really difficult, you know, and what's really a bad situation to be in, and how bad is it really? But that pushed me into law enforcement, came home from overseas, and I loved the uniform, the structure, the discipline, the service, you know. However, you know, Sam, I had an income problem. I was making $30,000 a year, working all the overtime I could, the worst schedule you can imagine. Finally, I would have done it for free the first couple of years. I loved working the road, but then got married, passed each other in the hallway the first whole year of marriage. And it was like, okay, you know, this is obviously not what is best. We wanted my wife at Chelsea to be able to stay at home when we had children. And that was going to be difficult. That was going to be very difficult. So 2008, 2009-ish, you know, I didn't know about the crash. I didn't make enough money for it to matter at that time, but that pushed me to look for something else to supplement our income. And I bought two triplexes, made a ton of mistakes, learned so much the hard way, but it was a great experience. It was our first university class on real estate and rentals and managing and all those things. But I then became a federal agent. That moved us to Virginia, where we live now. You know, increase my income, better schedule, all those things, right? Like you mentioned, you know, you get in those positions and it's like most people stay there. And that too, you know, it's hard for my family, hard for lots of people to understand, why would I leave that, right? It's a better job than most in my family, for sure. But most, you know, would dream about having, especially going from state police to federal, most dream of that. However, quickly reached the top, right? You know, like 3 years in, I couldn't go anywhere else unless I was willing to move all over the country. And it just wasn't worth it to us. And so finally, though, I had a horse training business, a whole nother story, but I was doing that full time. And my wife and I were walking on the beach one fall, and we were just really reflecting. We call it thinking time. We were reflecting and praying and just, you know, thinking about, okay, 3 years from now, is this going to get us where we want to go? And it was obvious at that point to both of us that this was not going to get us there. And it was never going to be passive. I was always going to have to, I was making some good money training horses. I was doing clinics all over the country. I was a passion of mine since I was a little boy, right? You know, I mean, a lot of us have something we've dreamed about doing. Well, I was doing it. I mean, I was doing tricks and selling horses for more money than I ever imagined. It came very easy to me, but it was always going to require me to do it. And it was like working two full-time jobs. So I was missing all the time with my boys and my wife, Chelsea, at that time. You know, we were missing all that time. And so it was like, okay, we got to make some big changes, some big decisions. We had bought the farm of our dreams and house like a year before this. And it was clear to us at that point that we had to sell it. And so we were fixing to start a third adoption process. We knew that was going to cost 40 to 60 grand. It did end up costing about 60 grand. And I was hiring a mentor to help me in commercial real estate. I mean, like all these expenses. And we were like, oh my goodness, you know, how are we going to do this? So we said, you know what? We're going to commit to this. We know commercial real estate can get us there. And actually, right before that, I started going to conferences and my eyes were open to all these people who were buying 100 unit complexes and only been in the business a couple of years. That seemed so far out of reach for me up until that point. And then right at this point is when we said, you know what? Hey, if this many people can do it, I can do this too. We're going to commit to this. And we did. We sold the farm, sold everything related to the horse training business, because I knew that would always be a draw for me. Like people would still be calling, hey, can you work with this horse? Can you do this? And I would want to do it, you know? And so I said, you know what? We've just got to cut that off completely. It won't be forever, but we've got to cut that off for now. And so we did. We bought a small house in town, not in the best area of town. I built the office in the basement, and that's where I practically lived for the next 2.5 years, to the point, and we may talk about it, but I mean, to the point my wife would fix me lunch, like to go to the basement to work. I mean, it was just madness for 2.5 years.
Wow. I mean, there's so much packed into that. I mean, there's more vision, there's more sacrifice. There's also some gamble built into that. Hey, we're going to sell the family farm. Hey, literally sell the farm. Like it's not just a phrase. We're selling the farm. You are, you know, so this, at this point, you've given up the federal agent gig. You're going full time into commercial real estate. Also, like you said, money's just going out the door and you're working your tail off for 2.5 years in the basement. What was the vision and how did you stay on course?
Yeah, great question. So I was actually still working as a federal agent while starting the commercial real estate business. We started the daily podcast. You know, there were like 2 days a month. My team would schedule 12 to 15 interviews in one day. Like that, people say, well, why'd you do so many in one day? That was just the only option. You know, like it wasn't a matter. I mean, that was just how I had to do it to get it done. And so I try to not focus on the how hard it's going to be, right? I try to get my boys to like, let's not even talk about how hard it's going to be. Let's talk about how, you know, steps to make it happen, right? It's going to be how hard it is, right? And there may be ways to minimize that, but hey, let's just go take action. And I bet it'd be even less than you expect, right? You know, let's go do it. And so that's what we had to do during that time. I lost track of your question though.
It's all right. Yeah. I was just asking, you know, what was the vision?
Oh yeah.
And how'd you stay on course?
A big part of that even goes back to when we first moved to Roanoke, Sam, you know, and I know you know this story, but we talked about it, but my wife and I, we grew up in one stoplight town and all that to say, we weren't exposed to much, right? In this little bitty community, a lot of people unfortunately never leave there and are never, you know, they never know about the bigger world that's outside of that area. And so the military, thankfully, you know, helped me to see a much bigger world in many ways. But when we moved to Roanoke, we were listening to a pastor talk about adoption, how they had adopted, how, the need. I mean, 150 to 60 million orphans in the world, and, you know, 40 to 60 grand to bring a child home often, you know, through adoption. That was just our first exposure to it. And on our way home that night, we had never thought about adopting before. We were still really newlyweds and never discussed it. But at this moment, we were like, well, why would we not adopt? Like, it just seems like the right thing to do. It seems, you know, why would we not? And so within a week, we turned in our application to adopt from Ethiopia. 2 years later to the month, my first son, Samuel, comes home from Ethiopia. A year later or less, actually 9 or 10 months, my second son, Elijah, comes home through adoption. And now we also have a daughter, Eden Joy, that's 2.5 years old, that came to our family through adoption. And so the Lord has just blessed our family in a big way through adoption. Each of those have been very difficult financially to pay for that process. However, it's not the children's fault. You know, I mean, the Lord has provided in massive ways. We lost tons of money through different parts of that process, you know, working with agencies that weren't credible. I mean, it's all kinds of things, but man, you know, the Lord still provided in massive ways, but it pushed us, Sam, to create a foundation that would help families with that financial burden. And so now we've started the Lifebridge Foundation, and the Lifebridge Foundation partners with families who want to adopt, but can't afford it financially. And so now we've partnered, I think, with 8 or 9 families. I mean, it's just incredible to see that happen now. And so we committed half of our personal profits, you know, to this foundation. We have other donors now as well, but we're helping those families. And that helped keep us going often, you know, like when it's like, man, I don't know if we can keep doing this. You know, there were so many days, weeks, months where like I'm traveling 2 to 3 weekends a month to conferences. Then I'll come home late Sunday night or even Monday morning, like on a red eye, do 12 to 15 interviews that day, still do investor calls, all that mess, you know, working with the team, and then, you know, work the rest of the week. It was just honestly madness for more than 2 years. My boys unfortunately knew that they almost wouldn't see me till Sundays most weeks. I would watch them through the little window in the basement, and I'm not proud of this, but I, you know, it was like one of the hardest things is that watching them play out in the backyard for so long and me not be able to be out there with them. But it just took that level of commitment to go as fast as we did. But it changed, you know, our whole trajectory, right? For the rest of our lives, our children's lives. And now I'm in control of that time now, right? It took a couple of years before I could leave the federal agent position, but we did it. And just the stamina. And also I'll mention, could not have done it without my wife. She did everything in the home. But back to your question, painting the vision, really of even going back out to a farm, was important to all of our family, including my boys. And helping your children see that vision as well, so important, right? Helping them see where we're going, why we're doing this, you know, the foundation, and helping these other children. And even for us personally, being back out on a farm and even us continuing to adopt and things like that was so crucial to keep that vision alive for them and my wife as well.
Let's talk a little bit about gaining traction. Like one of the things that I think is, yes, I love everything you're saying there about, you know, difficulty. Like it's all going to be difficult. We just got to figure out, instead of focusing on that, finding the steps to it. But even in that difficulty, I mean, 2.5 years is a long time to slog it out. Or to slug it out, I guess, slug it out. I don't even know whichever the right word is. Hey, we'll just make up words today, but to slug it out, I mean, that's a long time, right? And so how long into that process did you begin to see that, oh, hey, what I'm planting here, like it's the first day you see, you know, seeds come up in the garden. You're like, oh, hey, fun day. Like I came home here, I was gone for 4 days and I had some random seeds that were going to expire this year. And so I just threw them out in the garden after we tilled this last spring or last end of the season here. And I came home and I'm like, oh, hey, there's seeds coming up. That's fun. How long did it take for that kind of like, oh, that moment where you go, there's actually something going on here more than me just duking it out and hoping it works?
Yeah, great question. There were many times where my wife and I were like, I don't know if we can afford to keep doing this next month. I mean, producing a daily podcast is so expensive in itself. I mean, there were numerous months where we were like, I don't know, Lord, like, we don't know if we can afford to do it next month. Right now we can't. So I'm not sure what's going to happen, you know? But he would provide again and again, something, you know, one thing that happened probably a year or so in, maybe a year and a half in, I found my business partner. And that was we'd been praying for a business partner for a long time and been asked to partner by lots of people and honestly said, no, I had spent too much time and money, energy building those relationships with our investors, building that database and that trust to just go, you know, blow it on anyone, right? And so was very selective about that. That's a big process that we went through to ensure it was a good partnership, the best we could anyway. But then after that, the deal that helped me was probably another 6 or 8 months later that closed and was like, okay, now I can see that, okay, we've made a little money. Not much, but we've made a little money. There's a projection. There's a lot more deal flow. We can see we're going to have another deal probably under contract very soon. And we know we can raise some money now. We have some trust with our investors. I've tested it numerous times, and it was like, okay, I can see it. Like it's now or never. So really, at that point too, mentally, I just had enough. Like I was working too many hours, couldn't see the family, and it had to go one way or the other, you know, and I couldn't quit the real estate stuff, right? We were too far in, invested way too much time and couldn't quit, you know? So it was like, okay, the federal agent stuff's got to stop. Got to shut that off. It was just then, now or never. And we've never looked back.
That's fantastic. Were there smaller deals or things you did along the way to kind of start building that credibility with investors to begin showing, hey, you know what, I'm actually involved in some things? Or did you really just build this and then take down one massive deal?
Yeah, great question. So I partnered with my mentor on 2 projects. And they were the first project I put out to my investor base was 398 units. The next one was like 415. But that was a partnership, right? With another established operator, established group. And so that obviously helped in a massive way. But that database at that time was all from conferences that I've been traveling to. I was not raised going to the country club. I was not, you know, like I didn't have a network of any kind of wealth from any direction. Like it didn't matter which way I turned. I didn't know anybody that was an accredited investor. It just was not going to happen. You know, it didn't happen growing up. So I had to build all that from scratch. And I like just listeners to know that, right? It is possible. But I would say that first project, I raised $250,000. The next one I raised just under $500,000 or right at $500,000. And we've doubled almost every deal for numerous deals, right? So you do the math. It took a while, right? But once we started getting that train rolling, it just started building and compounding, and it's continuing to. It doesn't keep doubling now every time, but it is growing each time. But it didn't start that way, of course.
Yeah. And I think that's there's always at least, you know, from maybe I'm projecting this, but inferred shame that goes along with, well, I can only raise a couple hundred grand for a deal. Like that's just, it's not going to make a dent in a $7 or $10 million raise. Right. But yeah, those are the steps, the intermediate steps that you have to take in order to establish credibility.
I would say this though, the first deal that my business partner and I did together, it was after those two that I partnered with my mentor. The first one we did together was $30 million, which is not common, right? But yeah, those steps helped me massively.
So a $30 million project, you had to raise what? $7 million for it?
We raised about $7.5 million.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And what was your confidence level going into that saying I can get this done?
I wasn't so sure. My business partner had a network as well. He could raise some money. So that was very, very, very helpful. I mean, it played a big role in that. But I raised more, you know, again, I doubled, you know, again on that one, or more than doubled, more than doubled on that one. And so as far as confidence going in, you just don't know till you've done some deals, right? I mean, until you do it, you don't know. I mean, people say, oh, I've got, you know, $2 million in commitments. Well, have you raised money before? Well, no. Well, then you don't know what you can raise. You know, I've heard that so many times, and they try to raise and they raise $50,000 or nothing at times, right? There's no track record, no experience. So don't count on that, right? So $30 million on the first project. It's just the Lord really opening many doors.
Right. Oh, that's fabulous. Let's talk about your partnership there a little bit. You said that you vetted the partnership as best you could. What does that mean?
So we were introduced by a mutual acquaintance at a conference, and we it was really short at that time. Hello, how you doing? Whatever, where are you from? And then we ended up sitting at the same table amongst lots of other people about 2 nights in a row at dinner. And I got to hear him talk about his faith, his family, things he had accomplished already, you know, at a very young age, really, compared to most. I could tell he was very intelligent. And so right away, I was like, okay, you know, he has some complementary skill sets. I can see that. I can see that we're aligned on our faith and importance of our family and those things. And so after a couple of nights of that, the last night, I pulled him aside and just really took a step of faith here and said, I pulled him. I mean, it was like 10 p.m. the last night of the conference. I had a red eye like 1 or 2 in the morning. And I just said, hey, you know, you want to go get some coffee? And so we did. And I just was very upfront with him. I just said, you know what? I've been praying for it. My wife and I have been praying for a business partner for a long time. You seem to fit the bill. If you are interested in that, I'd love to get to know you a lot better, right? At least start that process. I was very upfront that it doesn't mean we're going to partner, but you know, from what I know about you right now, I'd like to get to know you better. And so he was excited about that. He ended up taking me by his house. He lived there locally. He ended up taking me to the airport as well, but he took me by his house. This is like 11:30 now at night. His wife was still up. She actually had coffee and homemade bread there ready for me when I got there. I said, okay, this is a done deal, right? after that, my wife and I then, and he and his wife scheduled numerous Zoom calls where we'd be on the phone for hour on the Zoom for hours, you know, just knowing this is the time to ask questions, right? I mean, this is like we're going into a marriage, all four of us, not just he and I, but all four of us entering this. This is our plan. What do you want to know? Like, this is, you know, this is who we are. But then I also went back to his house and stayed for 3 or 4 days just with he and his family. And you learn a lot about somebody by just seeing how they interact with their spouse and their kids and those things. So that was very beneficial. I've been to his parents now and numerous, you know, parts of his family just to get to meet them, right? It's been great. But also, again, complementary skill sets. He was obviously somebody that was very motivated. He had already accomplished a lot. And so I could see that, okay, it's not just, you know, I'm not going to be pulling this wagon by myself over here. We both have skills that we both need. And when we partnered, I mean, it was like we turned the rocket boosters on and we were able to move very fast.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. How long was I'm going to call it the vetting process, probably not the right word, but like, how long did you guys slow play this before you finally said, okay, let's put something in ink and move forward?
Yeah. So we met and I don't know if I've thought about it like that. That's a great, great thought. So we met in like February, and then June we were doing we partnered on a project, but it was, even then it was like a test run. It was a test run. It went great. We were very happy about that project. And then after we closed that deal, we're like, okay, we need to move forward and make this more official.
That's fabulous. And that's something that I think a lot of people miss, is taking that time in the partnership phase. And I think it's also interesting, you know, that you said there were a lot of people that approached you and said, hey, do you want a partner? Do you want a partner? And it just didn't seem right. I mean, is that really the short of it? Is it was just an inner kind of gut check? You're like, wait, your intuition says no.
Well, all those things I mentioned about Sam, my business partner, I mean, did not happen with these other people, right? We did not align. I knew we didn't align on most of those things that I knew were crucially important. And so that went ahead of doing any kinds of deal. It was tempting because, you know, I told you there were many months where I was like, I don't know if we can afford to go next month, but I knew if we did a deal, we'd be paid a little something, you know, but I just knew I wanted to think long-term and I knew that we shouldn't do it. I didn't feel good about it. And so I just said, nope. You know, it's just not what's best for us.
Right. Yeah. That's intriguing. A lot of things are one of the things I think, and you mentioned this early on, that people might not know about you. And I was pleasantly, you know, discovered this, you know, by searching. So I was searching a YouTube video for you for somebody you'd interviewed or something here a few months ago. And I found a random video with you training horses. You talked about this early on here in the episode, which for those of you who haven't looked up any of Whitney's horse training videos, I'd encourage you to do so. The man is a magician with a horse. I mean, I saw things that you did with a horse that I said, I didn't know that was possible. I think one of the scenes was where you'd made the horse lay down, you had taken a tarp and completely covered it with a tarp. Then you stood on the horse and then you used your whip and not obviously whip the horse, but just cracked it in the air and the horse just laid there. Like, okay, no big deal. There's only a guy standing on me with a tarp on me, cracking a whip above my head. And I know that all's good. Talk to us about the skills that translate from the horse training side into what it is that you're doing now.
A couple things, or one specific passion, dedication, are extremely just as an entrepreneur in any field, right? But you know, I would be in the arena. I would get home from the federal agent position. I would change clothes as fast as I could. I would load the horses up, go to the arena. I would give lessons for a few hours, and then it was time for me to train our own horses, right? And so then I would ride 3 to 5 horses, you know, even after giving lessons. And so I would be doing those tricks. I mean, numerous times it's midnight and I've got a horse laying down in the arena, you know, practicing tricks and things like that at midnight. It would happen. I mean, just 5-6 nights a week like that. And so it took that level of dedication, right, to be able to do those things, to really develop a skill set, right, you know, around training horses. But it did come easier for me, I think, than most. I did enjoy it a lot. But, you know, the feel and the timing and things that are important in horse training, developing that takes just thousands of hours, right? Thousands of hours. And so you can learn to communicate like that with this animal, you know, that's 12 to 1500 pounds, right? It's just, you know, it's really the time commitment. And then that goes into being a real estate investor, running a commercial real estate business, developing a business. I mean, it takes thousands of hours, and you're either going to put that in over, you know, over a certain period of time, and you can consolidate that and focus in a big way, or you can spread it out over many years. You know, many people have successful commercial real estate businesses and been doing it for 20 years, and they're just now at the, say, assets under management that we are, you know, in a few years. So you're going to put the time in, you know, one way or the other. And I did that in the horse training business, and finally decided, you know what, this is not what is best. But that same mentality, the willingness to put the hours in, to not give up, to say, you know what, we're going to do it. We're going to move forward, whatever it takes. You know, the same mentality will, you know, transfer to the commercial real estate business.
Yeah, I love that. The idea that we can go an inch wide and a mile deep if we want. And when you do that, you know, like I think you said, maybe it won't take 20 years, maybe it'll take 3, but the dedication to doing that is that's tough. That's a tough discipline to keep carrying forward. So I think one of the videos that I saw, you know, was a horse that you had trained. I got 2 questions on this. A horse you'd been trained and then sold. Where is that horse now?
You know, depending on which one you were watching, maybe you already have some insight into that. I'm not sure. So that's a great question. So if anybody's looking it up, his name is Shamrock. And I think the website's still live, Straight Path Horses. You can look it up and you see these videos of all these horses we sold or I did. But Shamrock, my best horse, yeah, by far, spent the most time with him. Just an amazing animal. Believe it or not, an attorney bought another horse from me, long story short, a few years before him, and his favorite horse ever, bought my saddle, all kinds of stuff. Then came and bought this horse, bought that saddle, all kinds of tack from me. And then the attorney called me earlier this year, actually, and said, hey, the first horse got sick, had to put her down, unfortunately. And he's getting older and should probably stop riding. He said, wanted to know if I wanted to buy this other horse back, a Shamrock back. And I said, I would love to. I mean, it was perfect timing. Actually, we have moved back out to a farm now. And so it's just incredible, you know, what the Lord has done. But I actually got all my tack back too. So it's just neat. Got that horse back and all my tack. And it's amazing.
That's awesome. So going back to the beginning of your story where you had to sell the family farm, part of your vision, part of your why, part of your dedication was knowing that you would return there one day under much better circumstances, maybe, than you were there in the first place.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love that. We don't always get to see those things come full circle. So that's fantastic. You're getting to live out that why. Talk to us about mentorship, both on the horse training side, because I don't think you woke up one day and were like, oh, look, I can do all these cool things with horses. Somebody had to teach you how to work with horses. And then also on the commercial real estate side and how that has affected your business.
Yeah, having a mentor is just crucial. I am such a believer in having somebody that's been there and done that. The horse training side, honestly, at that time, I couldn't afford to hire a mentor. I couldn't afford really to go somewhere elaborate and take lessons but I found a guy that I could relate to and who had a bunch of training videos and I mean tons of them. I mean, he had it laid out so well, you know, just how, I mean, from basic stuff to very advanced stuff. And I absorbed that as fast as I possibly could. But what I would do is I would watch the first DVD and I would go out and I would do it. Right. And I would go watch the next one and I would go back the next day and I would do the first one and the second one. I'd go out and watch the next one. And I mean, it's just this process. Right. And then eventually I would get another horse and I would start that process over. Right. And horse after horse after horse. And almost the horses became my mentors, really. And it is the number of horses that taught me how to do those things, right? Every horse is different, but you get better and better with different horses and horse after horse after horse. And it's almost that way in this business as well. I mean, the more people you meet, the more people you're around, the more you glean from them, the more you learn from them. And in this business, hey, at that time, my mentorship cost me $12,500. And I'll never forget. I mean, my wife and I were like, I don't know if we can afford it. Like, we're fixing to have to spend all this money on an adoption process. We're fixing, how are we going to do that? You know? And so, now, I mean, it's just a no-brainer, right? But at that time, that was so much money. And we didn't know if it was the best decision. But I'm so thankful we did it. That was another whole process of finding a mentor. There were numerous things that were important to me around that. I wanted somebody that was in the business, somebody I could communicate with personally, and somebody that I just felt like cared about my success personally, right? Not somebody that's just this high-level coach that has a team of coaches under them that you never get to talk to, that type of thing. And so that eliminated lots of great coaches, maybe even great programs, but it wasn't what I was looking for. And so I found somebody, I talked to people in Bigger Pockets. I had asked people if I could call them, that were in programs. That also helped me to probably keep from joining a couple programs that I probably would have if I hadn't have talked to some other people and learned about their experience. But it's a no-brainer. That same program now is 50 grand or more. And so even now, if I knew what I know now, and it was still 50 grand, I'd find a way to find the money. I mean, I would find a way to find the money to do it. Mentorship is just crucial. And with horse training, it was the videos. It was just me doing it almost by myself because that's all I could do, spending the time and numerous horses. But in real estate, man, the mentor was just crucial. Well, now I have thousands of mentors almost, right? Through the podcast and different people, that I'm meeting in this business.
Yeah. And I mean, you've said this over and over again. It's getting in the reps. Right. You've talked about, getting the mentors, but then you're taking the DVDs and going out and doing it. And then it is how many horses are you going to work with in order to get your reps in? It is how many people do you connect with? It is getting your reps in and building consistently and having, especially on the real estate side, having those coaches along the way that really, put the guardrails up and help guide you to your destination is awesome. We've talked about a lot of great things today. I mean, there's so many parts of your business I want to pick apart because you're doing some fascinating, fun things. But, unfortunately, I think we're running out of time here at the end of the show. I've got a couple of questions for you that kind of new parts of this show. So if this is terrible, we might end up cutting this out, but I don't think it will be. So I'm going to ask you for some definitions of some terms. So the first one is impact. How would you define impact?
How far is the needle going to move when you do this thing?
I love that. That's succinct. Okay. The second part to that question is what kind of impact do you believe you have on other people?
I pray that people see the Lord in me and that I am encouraging to them and that because of talking to me that they're motivated to do better, right? And that they believe that they can do better.
That's awesome. Love that. Success. What does it mean for you to be successful?
I think to be able to see others grow, see others motivated, to see others accomplishing their goals, their dreams. It's not monetary, at all. I just think it's more and more linked to seeing others reach their goals.
Love that. Let's talk about failure. What have you defined as a failure in your life and how did you overcome that and or turn it into something positive?
The worst deal I ever did was that first one, two triplexes. I mean, we were newly married and we were remodeling a house while living in it at the same time. And I say, my wife had to wash dishes in the tub a lot longer than I would like to admit. And that was a trying time, right? I mean, newly married, all this stuff happening, worst schedule, being a police officer, self-managing these apartments. But I think the failure component of that, the worst thing I regret about that is missing all that precious time with my new bride. Like mentally, I mean, I was already on the worst schedule possible. We were on opposite schedules. But then just even mentally, like thinking about remodeling this house, doing it all myself while living there and trying to manage these apartments. All of that, was nearly seems like a failure sometimes, but just because of the regret too, of just the time missed, with Chelsea at that time. But I tell you what, we learned a lot. And I think we are stronger as a couple because of that, probably earlier in our marriage than most, you know, because of some of those things. And man, I mean, there's a story I tell, you know, during all that stress, and still one of our biggest fights I think we've ever had, even to this day, was over a $250 weed eater. So, you know, it's just like, you know, I look back at that, it seems comical now. Hey, and I always like to say, I still have that weed eater and it still runs like a champ. So, but we learned a lot. And so all that to say, hey, we're stronger, I think, because of it. I just thank the Lord we didn't stop there, right? You know, in real estate or you know, just that we saw that as a growing experience.
That's awesome. Whitney, I've really enjoyed this. Last question for you, I guess second to last, is when it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
It's our foundation, to say the, I mean, by far, you know, is helping these families bring their children home to their forever family. I mean, it's just incredible to see. It was just a dream of ours for a number of years. And now all of a sudden to see children coming home to their forever families. I'm just thankful the Lord allows us to play this little bitty role in that. But to think about the generations that are changed because of that, I just can't even believe it, really, that's even happening now. But that's one of our biggest commitments to changing the world.
That's awesome. Whitney, if our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
LifeBridgeCapital.com. You can email me, Whitney@LifeBridgeCapital.com. You can call or text me, 540-585-4338. I'd love to connect with anyone.
Awesome. Whitney, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.